Live from the historic parsonage of 19th century gospel minister George Norcross in downtown Carlisle, Pennsylvania. It's Iron Sharpens Iron, a radio platform on which pastors, Christian scholars, and theologians address the burning issues facing the church and the world today. Proverbs 27, verse 17 tells us, "Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another." Matthew Henry said that in this passage, quote, "We are cautioned to take heed whom we converse with, and directed to have in view in conversation to make one another wiser and better." It is our hope that this goal will be accomplished over the next hour, and we hope to hear from you, the listener, with your own questions. Now here's our host, Chris Arnson.
Good afternoon, Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, Lake City, Florida, and the rest of humanity who are living on the planet Earth, listening via live streaming at ironsharpensironradio.com. This is Chris Arnson, your host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, wishing you happy Thursday on this third day of May, 2018. And today we have a first-time guest that I'm looking forward to interviewing, Gregory Wrightstone, who has his bachelor's degree from Waynesburg University and master's degree from West Virginia University, both in the field of geology. He is a geologist with over 35 years of experience researching and studying various aspects of the Earth's processes, who has written and presented extensively on many matters and aspects of geology, including how paleogeography and paleoclimate control geologic processes, and a global public speaker at many venues around the world, including Ireland, England, China, and India. And today we are going to be discussing his new book, Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Does Not Want You to Know. And it's my honor and privilege to welcome you for the very first time ever to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, Gregory Wrightstone.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Forgot to add, I'm actually a Cumberland County resident. Grew up in Mechanicsburg.
Great, yeah, I actually found that out right before we invited you on, and then we heard that you moved to the Pittsburgh area.
That's right, yeah.
And I'm looking forward to, at some point, not only meeting you in person when you're passing through Carlisle, but I'd also love to meet your brother Bob, who lives here in Carlisle, I understand.
That's right, he was a Dickinson Township supervisor for a number of years, trying to get them on the straight and narrow.
Well, they certainly,
which is a difficult task.
Yeah, I do not doubt that for a second. And before I get into the heart of the matter today, when we have first-time guests on the program, we usually like to hear about their religious upbringing and the providential circumstances that took place in their lives that the Lord used to draw them to Himself. And I know that you're currently a member of the Memorial Park Evangelical Presbyterian Church in the Pittsburgh area, but tell us something about your upbringing and so on.
Well, I was raised in the, brought up in the Silver Spring Presbyterian Church, actually the oldest church west of the Susquehanna, founded in 1734. So I was brought up in a pretty staid, we didn't pray with our hands up in the air, and it was old line Presbyterian church, hard back wooden pews with no cushions. So it was at times painful, but we moved out. My wife and I have gone on a journey of finding churches. I was in a Methodist church for a number of years. Rose to some higher levels of the leadership in that church, and actually left the Methodist church over fracking, because the Bishop Bickerton there came out on the warpath against fracking, which would have put many of his own parishioners out of work. Then we made another journey. We've landed with the Evangelical Presbyterian Church. It's a really good fit for us. We were just at our Wednesday evening meeting last night, my wife and I, and so we like that. We're we were never exposed to the worship like we have in this church. With we look around on Sunday morning and see people with their praying with their hands in the air, and we were very expressive and amens, and but we like it very much. It's been great for us to build our faith that way.
Well, great. And how did you get involved in the science field?
Well, I'm a geologist.
I met before. I met before that.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to fourth grade. My grandmother took me up to Perry County, just north of where you are, hunting fossils. And she was a woman ahead of her time, but she would take me up there, and we had a great place to find fossils, beautiful, beautiful fossils, trilobites, brachiopods, and the like. And that's what really got me hooked. And I had some fortuitous things that happened along the way early, even in later in elementary school, which hooked me up with a huge mineral collection. And that from that I was hooked. And so I've been very fortunate to be employed throughout my whole career, traveling around the world, like you say, and seen a lot of things, done a lot of things, including Algeria, North Africa, which was fascinating.
Now, going back to what you said earlier about the fracking, I'm assuming you're talking about the oil extraction?
In Pennsylvania, it would be natural gas extraction.
Okay, and because of the fact the United Methodist bishop or pastor was against that has something to do with your livelihood, I'm assuming.
It did at the time. I worked for a small family-run company that we did natural gas, vertical, shallow natural gas wells. And but he came out wanting a moratorium on fracking, which would have shut the entire industry down and would have affected probably tens of thousands of people's careers and their lives. And actually, fracking and cheap natural gas has provided great things for the people, low-cost energy. It's reduced our carbon dioxide emissions. So the one thing we do want like is inexpensive, reliable energy sources that help lift people out of poverty.
Great. Well, we are going to now. Oh yeah! First of all, I wanted to give a shout out to Dr. E. Calvin Beisner, the founder and national spokesman for the Cornwell Alliance for Stewardship of Creation, for the Stewardship of Creation, who is the one that referred me to our guest today. Thanks a lot, Cal, and we look forward to getting you back on the program as well.
And yeah, I'll jump in here right now. He contacted me. Out of the blue, actually, and just said that that your book just fully aligns with our philosophy, which is that of we want to need to fully utilize God's creation to benefit mankind while doing it as good stewards of the earth. And the book actually supports that greatly.
Great, and I wanted to make sure that our listeners had that website for the Cornwell Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. That's cornwallalliance.org, C-O-R-N-W-A-L-L, alliance.org. Thanks again, Cal, and we look forward to having you back on the show as well. Well, this is quite a provocative book in this day and age because, as you know, especially you more than anybody since you are in the field of science, if you dare to question everything that the left is saying about climate change and also global warming, you are a nut, you are a moron, you are a prehistoric, you're not with the times, you're a flat earther. I mean, you could go on and on and on.
Science denier.
Yeah, exactly. And so you are a geologist with over 35 years of experience. Did you always reject the global warming creed, as it were, the things that they are saying about climate change and the alarming level of fear and terror that they are trying to instill?
The answer is yes and no, because I didn't set out to write a book. What I did, I was very skeptical of some of the things we're being told. As a geologist, I knew that some of the things we're being told were just incorrect. I suspected other things were. So this really set out to be a search for the truth. And the search for the truth led me down many rabbit holes and eventually looking at what I call the climate apocalypse events and looking at each portion of this climate change debate. And what I found was truly shocking in that what we found and what I found there, which is shown in the book, is that so many of what we're being told, all of these bad things that are going to supposed to be occurring, are in fact either not occurring. In the great majority of the cases, they're lessening. Things like forest fires, intense heat waves, droughts, we're told increased heat-related mortality. All of these things that the media portrays as happening and as a done deal, when you actually look at the science, the facts, and the data, we find that in fact, those things I just mentioned are actually have been in decline. And the experts for each one of these fields tell us that the reasoning behind the decline is actually due to increasing temperatures and increasing CO2. And that's way, way, way at odds with what the media and the governments and the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and Al Gore and Dr. Michael Mann from Penn State, they don't want you to know these things. And that's why I've called it inconvenient facts. I like to use, for example, forest fires as a great example of just an example of things that we're told are happening that are going to go bad and are due to climate change. But actually, if we look at the science, the facts, and the data from forest fires, we find that in fact, forest fires have been in a long-term decline, more than 100 years. The forest fire experts tell us that, again, it's due to rising temperatures and increasing CO2, both of which are working in combination to provide greater soil moisture content across the world. And it's that soil moisture that's a critical element that's leading to a greening of the earth.
I'm going to give our listeners our email address. If you'd like to join us on the air with a question of your own, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us your first name, at least, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. And please only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. Let's say you are a scientist and you are getting a hard time from your colleagues or something and you want to remain anonymous, or perhaps you are you're in disagreement with your own pastor, or perhaps your pastor is some kind of an environmentalist activist or something. Whatever the case is, you want to remain anonymous. If it personally affects you, then and you have that right, and we will grant that request. But otherwise, please give us your first name, at least, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA.
Hey, Chris, could we touch on that, the Christian aspect of this?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I spoke, and it really, I did not, I owe Calvin Beisner a debt here for a number of things, but he opened my eyes to what the overarching theme of my book was. Perhaps I was too close to my own book, having dived into each one of the chapters and written it. And it wasn't until he came to me and talked to me about this that I stood back and I said, you know what, the overarching theme of the book is that the earth is prospering, it's thriving, it's greening because of rising temperatures and CO2. And by extension, humanity is benefiting. And that's a huge, tremendous, good story. I recently spoke at the, here in Western Pennsylvania, there's what's called the Oil Field Christian Alliance, fellowship rather, that meets once a month. I was their speaker last month, and the topic was Rethinking Climate Change, a New Christian Perspective. And what I did, I went back and looked at most of the big denominations, all that I could find, have some statement on climate change. And it's all predicated that our increase in CO2 is due to burning of fossil fuels, which will then lead to, or is leading to, unusual and unprecedented warming, which then leads to catastrophic climate events. That's the premise for this, the Christian perspective. And if that was actually happening, we as Christians have a duty. We're instructed to be good stewards of the earth. But it's not happening. What we see is those things that are predicted are just that. They're predictions based on climate models that can't effectively model climate very well. We know that the climate models are over-predict warming by 2.5 to 3 times. So what we see is I live in the real world, and I look at what's actually happening today, and we find that these things aren't happening. So if we start with the premise, or get rid of the premise, actually, that our sins of emission of CO2 are harming the planet, and do away with it and find out that they're really not, well, then there's no reason to ban fossil fuels, to delay fossil fuels, to keep it in the ground, to oppose pipelines. Because what we're doing with these, again, fossil fuels, natural gas and the like, are tremendously benefiting humanity, benefiting the earth, providing reliable, low-cost energy, which really benefits the poorest among us the most. So another way to really take another look at this through the lens of religion or Christianity or Judeo-Christianity. I just spoke with a Jewish radio station a couple of days ago.
Well, I want to get to a couple of our listener questions before I have you give us more scientific details. And let me repeat our email address again, by the way. It's chrisarnson@gmail.com. chrisarnson@gmail.com. We have Thomas in West Islip, Long Island, New York. And I have to enlarge Thomas's font on his email because it is microscopic. And while I'm enlarging that email address again is chrisarnson@gmail.com. chrisarnson@gmail.com. Please always give us your first name, city and state, and country of residence. Is CO2 a leading or trailing indicator of temperature change? During my undergraduate studies, it was taught it was a trailing indicator following temperature change, which the Glaciation cycle supports. Now it is being reported it is a leading indicator. How did they come to such a conclusion? I only ask because their whole argument depends on it being a leading indicator. That's
really good question. And the answer is yes and no. Yes, historically, through time, through the glacial periods, temperature preceded carbon dioxide changes. So it sounds counterintuitive, but cold water sucks up and retains more carbon dioxide than warm water. And imagine a liter jar of ginger ale in your refrigerator, and you pull it out, and you open it up, and it goes. Now put that liter jar on your picnic table in August and let it sit for an hour and open it up, and it's a volcano. What that's doing is expelling the CO2 that's in that liter jar of ginger ale. And the same thing sort of happens with the oceans. So as the oceans cool down as we go into an ice age, the oceans start sucking CO2 out of the atmosphere. So we see during ice ages, we see CO2 levels drop. And then when we get out of the ice age and temperature warms up, the oceans begin expelling the CO2. At the end of the last ice age, this is important, CO2 levels dropped to dangerously low levels. They drop to a level of 182 parts per million. And why is it dangerous? Because at 150 parts per million, plant life can't survive. We became within 30 parts per million of having a true climate apocalypse. That was the lowest CO2 levels ever in the history of the Earth. We're at about 400 parts per million today. And that's an increase from 280 before the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. So we've added about 120 parts per million. But if we look at throughout Earth's history, CO2 levels average 2,600 parts per million. At times in Earth's history, it was 6,000 and 8,000 parts per million, 15 and 20 times what they are today. So the CO2 levels we're at right now, you could make a very strong case that we're actually CO2 impoverished, that we don't have enough CO2. It's not that we have too much. We don't have enough at 400. And we argue, people argue it's dangerous at high levels. Well, submarines in the U.S. Navy often exceed 8,000 parts per million. It's not considered to be dangerous there.
Well, thank you, Thomas. And guess what? You have won a free copy of the book we are discussing today, The Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Please make sure we have your full mailing address there in West Islip, Long Island, New York, so that our sponsors, CVBBS.com, Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, can ship that out to you at no cost to you or to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. And we also want to thank our guest today, Gregory Wrightstone, for supplying us with three copies of the book today. We have a Gordy in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, who says, to what degree would you say you are in the minority in the scientific community as far as your assessment of climate change? Are others of like opinion so few or unwilling to risk their careers to voice their stance?
Yeah, another great question. And I'm pleased to say we hear a lot about a 97% consensus, but that's based on a study by John Cook a number of years ago. In it, he had five levels of classification. In his study, I would be part of the 97%. And the reason I would be is because I believe, as virtually every scientist that I know, the increase in CO2 that we've had, don't be a denier, the increase in CO2, and CO2 is a greenhouse gas, it has to have some warming effect on the atmosphere. It just does. I would argue it's very modest and that it's greatly overwhelmed by those same natural drivers that have been driving temperature for eons since the dawn of time. Those same drivers did not cease functioning at the beginning of the 20th century. So the 97% consensus, because I believe that, he would throw me in that. And that's crazy. It would be as if you were doing a survey on if there should be abortion on demand, okay? And you included people that in that abortion on demand if they opposed all forms of abortion except to save the life of the mother. Well, that you might get close to 97%. I don't know, maybe, but at least you'd get a lot higher than what it was. And that's very similar. You would get a result, but it's a really ineffectual result. So, I'm very encouraged. I've been speaking at scientific groups to large groups of geologists. I spoke in Morgantown, West Virginia, to a large group a couple of months ago. Very, very warmly received. The general reaction after I spoke was people coming up to me afterwards and vigorously shaking my hand. So I think people are afraid to speak out. A lot of people, too, if you do speak out and you're not armed with all the facts that you really need, you can be torn apart because there's these people, the alarmists, it's a vicious bunch. If you question the global warming alarmist, you know, it's a religion to them. And if you question that, boy, they'll come after you with the long knives.
Oh, yeah.
These scientists don't want to be involved with that. But that's part of that's the reason I wrote the book. I wrote the book to arm people with the facts. And I wrote it for non-scientists. I wanted a readable book that a regular Joe or Jane off the street could pick up and read. And I'm told that I've succeeded splendidly in that. In fact, I was in Romney, West Virginia. I was speaking to the Romney Tea Party, and a fellow was helping me set up the screen. And he had, like, the arms cut off on his shirt. And great guy. And he started talking to me about the book. He said about how much he loved it, and he told me it was the first book he read since high school. I said, aha.
Wow.
So I said, at that point I said, I think I was successful. So I've built this for to arm people and to arm your listeners if they go to my website, inconvenientfacts.xyz, and they hit the subscribe button on the homepage. I'll send them a link and provide them a PowerPoint of the top 25 figures in the book. No charge, nothing. I want this out there, and I want the people of America armed with the facts. So I'm just asking. So, again, it's inconvenientfacts.xyz, and you'll be sent a link to a PowerPoint for top 25 figures in the book.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Gordy, and I guess perhaps you heard our guest said earlier on that he is originally from Mechanicsburg, just as you are now from Mechanicsburg, and you are very close to CVBBS.com, Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, so instead of them shipping that book out to you, why don't you stop by there to pick it up? But they're not there yet. Our guest today, Gregory Wrightstone, just shipped them out today, so why don't you pop by there next Wednesday or so and see if they're there, or call CVBBS.com and make sure that they're there first. But thank you so much for contributing to our program with your question today. We have, let's see here, we have BB in Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, and she said, you're obviously using a play on words there in your title, and referencing An Inconvenient Truth, the movie by Al Gore. In the title of your book, you say that you have science that Al Gore doesn't want us to know. Is that implying that Al Gore really does know the truth in this matter and is consciously perpetuating a hoax or fraud?
Yeah, is he? No one knows what's in the heart of a person. It's certainly possible that he actually believes everything he's saying. So I'm not going to. There are a lot of people that do believe this, but the facts. I'm seeing a sea change now. In the debate, and there truly is a debate. Al Gore is. He's made so much money on this. There's no way he could go back now. But what he knows and believes in his heart of hearts, I can't judge that. But again, he's become fabulously wealthy on the backs of this hoax.
Now let me include my own question, and I know you would have to have the mind of Christ to be able to know the hearts of men, but what is your speculation on the scientific community that seems to be in lockstep with this? Are they, do you believe, because you're a scientist and what you see from scientific data, do you think that most global warming alarmists in the scientific arena are echoing this, what you would call, and what many of us on the right, if you want to use a label, would call it a hoax? Are they doing so to preserve their careers or even give themselves more career opportunities in their field?
Yeah, it's again, that's a really good question. I opened my book up with a quote from H.L. Mencken, and to paraphrase quickly here, he said that governments and institutions need to create fictional hobgoblins of alarm with which to scare the population. And if you scare the population enough, the citizens will gladly accept onerous and painful regulations and rules, something like the Paris Climate Accord, that otherwise they would never accept. So I think this is what the climate change is one of H.L. Mencken's hobgoblins of alarm. But why are so many scientists participating in this? I don't know, but it's, I think perhaps the biggest loser in all this is the scientific process. And as a scientist, the diminishment of the scientific process is horrible to watch. We saw it in the fracking debate. We see a lot of similarities between that the anti-fossil fuel movement, the climate change, these are all interwoven and linked in. In some cases, we see pseudoscience, and a lot of cases, they take a kernel of truth and twist it into something that's not. We can talk about a lot of that as we go forward here. But the scientific process should be presenting a hypothesis and then testing it and testing it and retesting it. And if the tests you're doing don't fit your hypothesis, you change your hypothesis. But in this case, they've turned it on the head. What they have is they have not a hypothesis. They've come up with a solution. The answer first, and now we must fit all the facts to fit the answer. If you come up with science or facts that are contrary to what the answer is, now the answer to them is CO2-driven or greenhouse gas-driven warming alarm and alarming consequences. So that's really contrary to what the scientific process should be. And the question has to be, why are they lying to us? And, you know, what is, again, we can't see in the hearts of man. And I don't know, but I think in the not too distant future, we're going to look back at this period with and be ashamed, those in the scientific community that participated in this, because it will bear itself out at some point. We're going to go long enough that we're going to see that how wrong they really are. Is it a decade or more? I don't know. But I see a big turnaround now. I'm very hopeful, very, very hopeful that we can get the word out. And it's books like this and shows like yours that help to get that word out. But again, the big thing here is actually looking at what's, and again, it's in the last half of the book I deal with it, what's actually happening today. I'm not, you know, we compare predictions based on these climate models. It's important for us to separate speculation from facts, and that's what I've tried to do in this book.
Well, by the way, BB, you've also won a free copy of the book that we are giving away today, Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. Thanks a lot for sending in your question, and please make sure we have your full mailing address so we can have that book shipped out to you. And you could also stop by cvbbs.com or Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service, as it's also known, on North Hanover Street in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, to pick that up next week. We're going to be going to our first break right now. And if you would like to join us on the air with a question of your own, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us your first name, city and state, and country of residence if you live outside the USA. Only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. God willing, we'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors, so please don't go
Calvary
away.
Calvary Chapel, South Jersey would like to invite you to a day with Dr. Jason Lyle. Dr. Lyle is a well-known Christian astrophysicist who writes and speaks on various topics relating to science and the defense of the Christian faith. Dr. Lyle will be joining us here at Calvary Chapel, South Jersey on Sunday, May the 6th at 9 and 11 a.m., and then again that same evening at 7 p.m., speaking on topics such as the ultimate proof of creation, understanding Genesis, and astronomy reveals creation. So plan on joining us for an exciting experience of knowledge and wisdom as we spend time with Dr. Jason Lau at Calvary Chapel, South Jersey, 1210 Hessian Avenue, West Deptford, New Jersey. For further information, check out our website at ccsouthjersey.org or call us at 856-848-4500.
Hi, I'm Chris Arnzen, host of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, here to tell you about an exciting offer from World Magazine, my trusted source for news from a Christian perspective. Try World at no charge for 90 days and get a free copy of R.C. Sproul's book, Relationship Between Church and State. I rely on World because I trust the reporting. I gain insight from the analysis, and World provides clarity to the news stories that really matter. I believe you'll also find World to be an invaluable resource to better understand critical topics with a depth that's simply not found in other media outlets. Armed with this coverage, World can help you to be a voice of wisdom in your family and your community. This trial includes biweekly issues of World Magazine, on-scene reporting from World Radio, and the fully shareable content of World Digital. Simply visit wng.org/ironsharpens to get your world trial and Dr. Sproul's book all free. No obligation with no credit card required. Visit World News Group at wng.org/ironsharpens today.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bill Shishko, inviting you to tune in to A Visit to the Pastor's Study every Saturday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time on WLIE Radio, www.wlie540am.com. We bring biblically faithful pastoral ministry to you, and we invite you to visit the pastor's study by calling in with your questions. Our time will be lively, useful, and I assure you, never dull. Join us this Saturday at 12 noon Eastern Time for A Visit to the Pastor's Study, because everyone needs a pastor.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com, and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Gregory Wrightstone. He's a geologist, and we are discussing his book, Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. If you'd like to join us on the air, our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. And please give us your first name, city and state, and country of residence. And before we go to any more audience questions, Gregory, I'd like you to lay out for us the most disturbing things that we are being told by not only politicians and liberal pundits, but also members of the scientific community about climate change and global warming that you believe are flat-out lies, and why you think these lies are dangerous. The primary things, if you could list them, as many as you care to, or that we have time for you to list.
Oh, my. Well, that list is awfully long.
Let's take five.
let's start with, some of these are woven together. We talked, I like to use forest fires as a great example of why the alarmists are wrong, because everybody thinks that forest fires are increasing. You probably do. Your listeners do. I did. Before I really looked at the science, the facts, and the data, I thought forest fires were increasing, and who wouldn't? You
know? And I had such a guilt trip on hanging over me, because Smokey the Bear would tell us, can help solve forest fires.
Right.
Only I can help prevent forest fires.
Yeah, so what I did, I went back, and I'm no fire expert, but I went and researched those that were, people from the Canadian Fire Service. In the United States, it's the U.S. Interagency or Fire Agency, and I looked what they had to say in their numbers, and it's amazing. These people tell us that forest fires and wildfires have been a long-term decline, and they attribute it to increasing soil moisture content around the world. And this is where these all get interwoven, because when we talk about forest fires, droughts, and heat waves and the like, these are all, they're all revolving around this increased soil moisture content. And it sounds counterintuitive that rising temperatures would lead to increased soil moisture. But the fact of the matter is, as temperatures rise, and they are, have been for really since the year 1695, we'll talk about that in a bit, but as temperatures rise, water vapor content increases in the atmosphere, which then leads to more precipitation. And that precipitation is coming down in places it's really needed. And we'll talk about that in just a moment, too. So we get increased precipitation, which helps to increase soil moisture content. And then that's combined and multiplied by CO2 fertilization effect. The CO2 fertilization effect from rising CO2 means that one of the effects of it, of increasing CO2, and there are many, many beneficial aspects for increasing CO2. One is that the pores on the plants, they're called stomata. Stomata are smaller. With increasing CO2, they're smaller. The plants don't have to breathe in and out as much. It's called transpiration. And because of that, they're not losing, the plants aren't losing as much moisture, so they don't draw more moisture out of the ground. And because of that, moisture is retained in the ground. So those two things working in tandem have led to a worldwide increase in soil moisture content. And it's that soil moisture increase that's dampening forest fires, it's helping to alleviate extreme heat waves, that's leading to lessening of droughts and having fewer droughts. And one of the great examples in the book is a satellite analysis by NASA showing the greening of the Earth. It's just stunning. It's and I believe I sent that on one of my an email to you about that. But we, according to NASA, up to 50% of the Earth is what they call greening. In other words, vegetation has been increasing for the last 30 years. Only 4% of the planet is what they call browning, or desertification. In other words, there's a loss of vegetation. That's a good trade-off. If up to 50% of the planet is prospering and flourishing, and only 4% is going the other way, I'll take that any day. I'll take that. I mean, you don't want to be where that 4% is. Too bad for you.
Well, the thing is, these global warming alarmists, they typically, you know, will just be referring to the polar regions of the globe, and the polar bears losing their glaciers to hang around on and all that kind of thing, and the flooding that may occur. But they really never demonstrate, other than that aspect, how warming is even a negative thing when life thrives more abundantly the warmer the climates are.
Yeah, and let's make sure we talk about that in a little bit, the relationship. Let's not do it right now, but I really want to talk about the relationship between warming and cooling and the rise and fall of civilizations. There's strong linkage there. But let's get back to this greening of the Earth. A lot of your listeners probably are in front of a computer right now or have their smartphone. Just Google NASA greening and Sahara. So you don't, this way you're going to be going, oh, you're Greg, you're full of it. You know, I don't believe this. Google NASA greening and Sahara and see what you get. And you'll find that the NASA scientists, study after study, in the southern Sahara, it's called the Sahel, 300,000 square kilometer area of the Sahara is turning into a lush grassland. Animals are moving back into the area, like gazelle and even amphibians. People are moving back into that area that haven't lived there in thousands of years. And the scientists that you can read when you Google that, they attribute it to climate change, to warming temperatures, to increasing CO2. And that's a huge, huge, untold story that should be championed on the front page of the New York Times, but you'll never see it. You'll never see it because it doesn't fit the template. It doesn't fit the template of us spiraling into these climate calamities due to our increasing CO2 and use of fossil fuels. And we see the same thing. You can Google a greening of Australia and India. Australia is seeing very similar effects. So we're seeing these formerly arid desert areas, that are benefiting from the combination of rising temperatures and increased CO2. And it sounds counterintuitive, but the fact of the matter is, just Google what I said, and you'll see what NASA has to say. And again, they attribute it to climate change. And we see, too, the soil moisture increase is lessening droughts. If we look at a great study was done of the most significant and severe droughts of the 20th century, and most of those severe droughts occurred before the year 1960. We've seen a steady, steady decrease in these severe droughts. And again, they attribute it due to soil moisture increase. And that's a good thing. You're going to hear me say that's a good thing a lot. You're going to be tired of me saying that's a good thing. Donald Trump saying you're going to get tired of winning. There's good things going on the planet, and it's not being reported. And that's, I feel like an old-time evangelist spreading the good news of the gospel of increased temperatures and CO2, because nobody's heard it. and it's a great story. And the planet and the humanity are thriving because of it. We're seeing, at some point, we need to talk about crop growth and how we're able to feed the hungriest among us and feed a growing population, again, driven by increasing temperatures and increasing CO2.
And we'll have you go through more on that list, but I do want to get to a listener question because it's an excellent one. This listener obviously did her homework. She must have gotten either a transcript of a 60 Minutes broadcast, or she had it recorded and paused so she could write things down, because she has a little transcript of last Sunday's 60 Minutes. And Linda in Hilltop Lakes, Texas says, last Sunday, CBS 60 Minutes showed a documentary on kelp farming. Here is some of the transcript. Betsy Peabody says, roughly 25% of CO2 in the atmosphere is being absorbed into oceans. Leslie Stahl answers, and that is what we're getting from fossil fuels? Betsy Peabody, from both carbon emissions and deforestation, and I think initially people thought, well, thank goodness the oceans are taking up some of that carbon dioxide. But then scientists started to document that, in fact, when that carbon dioxide goes into the ocean, it causes chemical changes. Kelp take up carbon dioxide like any plant does, and it just so happens it lives in the water. There are winners and losers in ocean acidification. Organisms that produce carbonate shells, like shellfish, they're a loser. They can't handle the lower pH. They can't deposit as much calcium in their shells. On the other hand, when seaweeds, like kelp, they actually pick up that carbon dioxide because now it's easier for them to do photosynthesis. Can your guest, Greg Wrightstone, comment on these discoveries? Thank you so much for the work on Iron Trippin's Iron Radio, and your excellent guest, Greg Wrightstone. That's Linda. Linda in Hilltop Lakes, Texas.
Well, number one, ocean acidification is really what drove me to start this whole process, because we, as a geologist, I knew this was impossible. I know that since the Precambrian time, there's only been one short period of time on Earth when the oceans actually did become acidic. The original Precambrian oceans were thought to be slightly acidic. If you look out your window and look at the rocks that are exposed along I-81, you're going to find the Conococheague limestone there in the road cuts. That was deposited at a time where CO2 levels were 6,500 parts per million. And we're at 400 today. We're being told that our slight increase in CO2 to 400 is causing the oceans to become acid. If that's the case, why did the oceans not become acidified at times when we were 15 and 20 times as much CO2 in the oceans? Is there some new process at work that's turning oceans acidic? No. But those limestone rocks could not have been deposited because It can't happen. And we know that about 6,000 years ago, looking at reefs in the South Pacific, we had much lower pH than what we have today. Lower being, again, it's not acidic. We have had a slight drop in pH over the last 40 to 50 years, very slight. But even the most radical alarmist alleging ocean acidification, even they don't allege that the oceans actually become acidified. A better description of what's happening is that the oceans are becoming slightly less basic, because right now they're slightly basic. We're about 8.0, 7.9 or so. And if you recall your elementary school, pH of 7 is the level that's actually between the two. So, the ocean acidification argument is just without merit.
Well, thank you, Linda, in Hilltop Lakes, Texas, for doing such wonderful homework there, and we look forward to receiving your next question for a guest in the future. But please give us your full mailing address there in Hilltop Lakes, Texas, so we can have this book that we have been discussing shipped out to you, Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know, by our guest, Gregory Wrightstone.
And I will mention, the books that I sent out, they've all been signed by me. So,
oh, great.
They'll be getting an autographed copy, and the autograph always includes, I always put in the front of the cover, it's arm yourself with the facts.
Amen.
Have it signed, so they'll be getting a signed copy from me.
Wow, that's even more special. So make sure we get your mailing address, Linda, in Hilltop Lakes, Texas. And we're going to our midway break right now. It's the longer than normal break. Please be patient with us. It's a break that Grace Life Radio, 90.1 FM in Lake City, Florida, requires us to take between our two main segments. It's 12 minutes long. So take this time to write down the information that our advertisers are providing, and also take this time to write your own questions for Gregory Wrightstone on Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. And our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com, chrisarnson@gmail.com. Please give us your first name, your city and state, and your country of residence if you live outside the USA. And please only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. Don't go away. We'll be back momentarily with Gregory Wrightstone and more of our discussion on the science that Al Gore doesn't want you to know.
Calvary Chapel, South Jersey would like to invite you to a day with Dr. Jason Lyle. Dr. Lyle is a well-known Christian astrophysicist who writes and speaks on various topics relating to science and the defense of the Christian faith. Dr. Lyle will be joining us here at Calvary Chapel, South Jersey on Sunday, May the 6th at 9 and 11 a.m., and then again that same evening at 7 p.m., speaking on topics such as the ultimate proof of creation, understanding Genesis, and astronomy reveals creation. So plan on joining us for an exciting experience of knowledge and wisdom as we spend time with Dr. Jason Lau at Calvary Chapel, South Jersey, 1210 Hessian Avenue, West Deptford, New Jersey. For further information, check out our website at ccsouthjersey.org or call us at 856-848-4500.
Tired of box store Christianity, of doing church in a warehouse with all the trappings of a rock concert? Do you long for a more traditional and reverent style of worship? And how about the preaching? Perhaps you've begun to think that in-depth biblical exposition has vanished from Long Island. Well, there's good news. Wading River Baptist Church exists to provide believers with a meaningful and reverent worship experience, featuring the systematic exposition of God's Word. And this loving congregation looks forward to meeting you. Call them at 631-929-3512 for service times. 631-929-3512, or check out their website at wrbc.us. That's wrbc.us.
I'm James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries. The New American Standard Bible is perfect for daily reading or in-depth study. Used by pastors, scholars, and everyday readers, the NASB is widely embraced and trusted as a literal and readable Bible translation. The NASB offers clarity and readability while maintaining high accuracy to the original languages, which the NASB is known for. The NASB is available in many editions like a topical reference Bible. Researched and prepared by biblical scholars devoted to accuracy, the new topical reference Bible includes contemporary topics relevant to today's issues. From compact to giant print Bibles, find an NASB that fits your needs very affordably at nasbible.com. Whichever edition you choose, trust, discover, and enjoy the NASB for yourself today. Go to nasbible.com. That's nasbible.com.
Chef Exclusive Catering is in South Central Pennsylvania. Chef Exclusive's goal is to provide a dining experience that is sure to please any palate. Chef Damian White of Chef Exclusive is a graduate of the renowned Johnson & Wales University with a degree in culinary arts and applied science. Chef Exclusive Catering's event center is newly designed with elegance and style and is available for small office gatherings, bridal showers, engagement parties, and rehearsal dinners. Critics and guests alike acknowledge Chef Exclusive's commitment to exceeding even the highest expectations. I know of their quality firsthand since Chef Exclusive catered my most recent Iron Sharpens Iron Radio Pastor's Luncheon. For details, call 717-388-3000. That's 717-388-3000. Or visit chefexclusive.com. That's chefexclusive.com.
Have you been blessed by Iron Sharpens Iron Radio? We remain on the air because of our faithful sponsors and because of listeners like you. There are four ways you can help. First, do you know potential sponsors who may wish to advertise their goods or services on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio? Second, whenever possible, purchase the products or use the services that our sponsors advertise. And then let them know that you heard about them on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Thirdly, you can also donate to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio by going to our website at ironsharpensironradio.com and click support at the top of the page. But most importantly, keep Iron Sharpens Iron Radio in your prayers. We hope that Iron Sharpens Iron Radio blesses you for many years to come.
Iron Sharpens Iron welcomes Solid Rock Remodeling to our family of sponsors. Serving South Central Pennsylvania, Solid Rock Remodeling is focused on discovering, understanding, and exceeding your expectations. They deliver personalized project solutions with exceptional results. Solid Rock Remodeling offers a full range of home renovations, including kitchen and bath remodeling, decks, porches, windows and doors, roof and siding, and more. For a clear, detailed professional estimate, call this trustworthy team of problem solvers who provide superior results that stand the test of time. Call Solid Rock Remodeling at 717-697-1981, 717-697-1981, or visit solidrockremodeling.com. That's solidrockremodeling.com. Solid Rock Remodeling, bringing new life to your home.
Every day at thousands of community centers, high schools, middle schools, juvenile institutions, coffee shops, and local hangouts, Long Island Youth for Christ staff and volunteers meet with young people who need Jesus. We are rural and urban, and we are always about the message of Jesus. Our mission is to have a noticeable spiritual impact on Long Island, New York by engaging young people in the lifelong journey of following Christ. Long Island Youth for Christ has been a stalwart bedrock ministry since 1959. We have a world-class staff and a proven track record of bringing consistent love and encouragement to youths in need all over the country and around the world. Help honor our history by becoming a part of our future. Volunteer, donate, pray, or all of the above. For details, call Long Island Youth for Christ at 631-385-8333. That's 631-385-8333. Or visit liyfc.org. That's liyfc.org.
Paul wrote to the church at Galatia, "For am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ. Hi, I'm Mark Lukens, pastor of Providence Baptist Church. We are a Reformed Baptist church, and we hold to the London Baptist Confession of Faith of 1689. We are in Norfolk, Massachusetts. We strive to reflect Paul's mindset to be much more concerned with how God views what we say and what we do than how men view these things. That's not the best recipe for popularity, but since that wasn't the apostles' priority, it must not be ours either. We believe, by God's grace, that we are called to demonstrate love and compassion to our fellow man, and to be vessels of Christ's mercy to a lost and hurting community around us, and to build up the body of Christ in truth and love. If you live near Norfolk, Massachusetts, or plan to visit our area, please come and join us for worship and fellowship. You can call us at 508-528-5750, that's 508-528-5750, or go to our website to email us, listen to past sermons, worship songs, or watch our TV program entitled Resting in Grace. You can find us at Providence Baptist Church, ma.org, that's Providence Baptist Church, ma.org, or even on sermonaudio.com. Providence Baptist Church is delighted to sponsor Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
One sure way all Iron Sharpens Iron Radio listeners can help keep my show on the air is to support my advertisers. I know you all use batteries every day, so I'm urging you all from now on to exclusively use BatteryDepot.com for all your battery needs. At BatteryDepot.com, they're changing the status quo. They're flipping the script. They're sticking it to the man. In other words, they'd like to change the battery industry for good by providing an extensive inventory of top-of-the-line batteries that are uniformly new, dependable, and affordable. Ordering from BatteryDepot.com ensures you'll always get fresh out-of-the-box batteries you can count on to work properly at competitive prices. Whether you need batteries for cordless phones, cell phones, radios, PCs, laptops, tablets, baby monitors, hearing aids, smoke detectors, credit card readers, digital cameras, electronic cigarettes, GPSs, MP3 players, watches, or nearly anything else you own that needs batteries, go to BatteryDepot.com. Next day shipping available. All products protected by 30-day guarantees and 6-month warranties. Call 866-403-3768. That's 866-403-3768. Or go to BatteryDepot.com. That's BatteryDepot.com.
Hi, I'm Buzz Taylor, frequent co-host with Chris Arnson on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. I would like to introduce you to my good friends Todd and Patty Jennings at CVBBS, which stands for Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service. Todd and Patty specialize in supplying Reformed and Puritan books and Bibles at discount prices that make them affordable to everyone. Since 1987, the family-owned and operated book service has sought to bring you the best available Christian books and Bibles at the best possible prices. Unlike other book sites, they make no effort to provide every book that is available because, frankly, much of what is being printed is not worth your time. That means you can get to the good stuff faster. It also means that you don't have to worry about being assaulted by the pornographic, heretical, and otherwise faith-insulting material promoted by the secular book vendors. Their website is cvbbs.com. Browse the pages at ease, shop at your leisure, and purchase with confidence as Todd and Patty work in service to you, the church, and to Christ. That's Cumberland Valley Bible Book Service at cvbbs.com. That's cvbbs.com. Let Todd and Patty know that you heard about them on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And you can call cvbbs.com at their toll-free number, 800-656-0231. 800-656-0231. They man that phone line typically Monday through Friday between 10 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you call and you get no answer, just call back the next day if it is a weekday. Or you can order 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks of the year at cvbbs.com. And if you order $50 or more from cvbbs.com and you mention Chris Arnson on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, not only will you get free shipping on everything you've purchased, but you also get absolutely free of charge the $19 book Luther on the Christian Life, Cross and Freedom, by Carl Truman, who's been a guest on this program a number of times. So please make sure that you mention Chris Arnson and Iron Sharpens Iron Radio if you're purchasing $50 or more, so you could get free shipping and also the free book, Luther on the Christian Life, Cross and Freedom. It's a Crossway publication, and it retails for $19. Before I return to our discussion with Gregory Wrightstone on Inconvenient Facts, the science that Al Gore doesn't want you to know, we just have some important upcoming announcements. First of all, many of our listeners today in particular will be delighted to know that on Tuesday of next week, we have returning to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, Ken Ham, the president, CEO, and founder of Answers in Genesis, and the highly acclaimed Creation Museum and the world-renowned Ark Encounter, one of the most in-demand Christian speakers in North America. He's going to be addressing his brand-new book, Gospel Reset, Salvation Made Relevant. And later during that same broadcast, we will be joined by my old friend, Dr. F. Lagarde Smith, who's going to be addressing his new book, Darwin's Secret Sex Problem, Exposing Evolution's Fatal Flaw, The Origin of Sex. That's with Dr. F. Lagarde Smith, and that will be also on Tuesday, May 8th, next week. And then we have some events coming up that we want you to know about. We have, first of all, the Alliance of Confessing Evangelicals is once again having their Faithful Shepherd Pastors Retreat in Harvey Cedars, New Jersey, at the Harvey Cedars Bible Conference. That's being held next week on the 14th, 15th, and 16th of May. And the theme is The Welcoming Church. And the speakers include Erwin Ince, Randy Neighbors, Joe Novenson, and Deepak Raju. And I probably mispronounced every single one of those names. But if you'd like to register, please go to AllianceNet.org, AllianceNet.org, click on events, and then click on Faithful Shepherd Pastors Retreat. And then we have later this month also, at the end of the month, from the 29th through the 31st of May, the Banner of Truth U.S. Ministers Conference in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, at the Elizabethtown College. The speakers include Alistair Begg, Johnny Gibson, Mark Johnston, Al Mohler, David Strain, and Craig Troxell. The theme is Ministers of Christ. If you would like to register for the Banner of Truth Ministers Conference, go to banneroftruth.org, banneroftruth.org, click on events, and then click on U.S. Ministers Conference. Make sure you click U.S. and not U.K. because they already had a U.K. Ministers Conference. In fact, they had several of them. But this is the U.S. Ministers Conference right here in Pennsylvania in Elizabethtown. And I hope that you can see me there, because I do intend to be there May 29th through the 31st. Go to banneroftruth.org, banneroftruth.org. Last but not least is the least comfortable or most uncomfortable time of the program, and that's where I have to beg you for money. I hate doing it, but my advertisers, who spend their own hard-earned money keeping this program on the air, have urged me to the breaking point of finally making these public appeals for donations. You know, if you listen to this program long enough, going back to 2005, I went for many years without making a single public appeal for donations, but we are at the point where we urgently need your donations. So if you really love this show, you don't want it to go away, you look forward to the guests and topics, you look forward to sharing the free MP3s with others, and please go to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, then click to donate now. And you'll immediately be able to donate through a debit or credit card. If you prefer the old-fashioned way of mailing in a check via snail mail, you will see a mailing address where you can send that check made payable to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Never, ever, ever siphon money away from your regular giving to your local church that you're accustomed to. If you're not a member of a local Bible-believing church and you are not prayerfully seeking for one, you are living in disobedience to God. So please rectify that situation and find a local Bible-believing church and join it. If you are having a hard time, I have lists of biblically faithful churches all over the world, so you can email me at chrisarnson@gmail.com if you're having a hard time finding a good church to join. But please don't ever siphon money away from your regular giving to your local church in order to give to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, and never put your family in financial jeopardy to give to Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, because providing for your family and providing for your church are two commands of God. Providing for me and my radio program is not a command of God. But if you love the show and you don't want it to go away, then please go to ironsharpensironradio.com, click support, and then click to donate now or mail in a check to the address that you will see. If you want to advertise with us, as long as whatever it is that you want to promote is compatible with the theology we express on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio, it doesn't have to be exactly identical to what I believe, but it needs to be compatible. At least whatever you're promoting needs to be compatible with what I believe. Then send us an email to chrisarnson@gmail.com and put advertising in the subject line, and I would be more than happy to help you launch an ad campaign, because we truly do need your advertising dollars. That's chrisarnson@gmail.com. And now we are finally back with our guest, Gregory Wrightstone. He is a geologist, and he is the author of Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. If you have a question of your own, our email address is chrisarnson@gmail.com. chrisarnson@gmail.com. Give us your first name, city and state, and country of residence. And Gregory, before we go to any more listener questions, I want you to go over some more of the primary things that the scientific community and the politics and the politicians and the liberal pundits are telling us about climate control that you think are totally wrong, provably and documentably wrong, and also dangerous. These lies are dangerous.
Yeah, there's first of all, that CO2 is a pollutant. Under the Obama EPA, it was declared a pollutant. It was found that because it was estimated, it's projected that the increase in CO2 is, again, leading to unprecedented and unusual levels of temperature, increases in temperature, which then will lead to calamitous effects due to the warming. But the fact of the matter is, hopefully Scott Pruitt at EPA, Trump's new EPA administrator, can also make a ruling declaring it not a pollutant, hopefully. Because as we can see, I think the big thing are the positive benefits of increasing CO2. Those are many. Those run the gamut from resistance, drought resistance, pest resistance, increase in CO2 fertilization leading to increasing significant plant growth. And so perhaps the biggest bugaboo that we see is the demonization of CO2 into what should be rightly called the miracle molecule into an evil. We've turned it into the devil incarnate. This is this thing that's awful, when in fact science, facts, and data show us to be incredibly beneficial. And one of the things we could look at is crop growth. And in the book, I've got an entire chapter devoted to that. And they won't like it, they being the alarmists. But the fact of the matter is, the chapter on crop growth is was titled "Famine: The Best Solution Is More CO2 and Increasing Temperature." They hate it, but it's true. What we see here in the book, I capture lab studies that were completed show that a 300 part per million, bear in mind we're at 400 parts per million now, a 300 part per million increase in CO2 will lead to a 46% average increase in crop productivity. And in that, I looked at the crops captured from these experiments that represent 95% of the food production in the world. There'll be a 46% increase in crop production by gross biomass of those crops. That's a tremendous, tremendous benefit. Again, we'll be able to feed our growing population. The side benefit, too, we see increasing temperature with crop growth. We see that increasing temperature leads to longer growing seasons, the killing frosts end earlier in the spring and arrive later in the fall. I mean, that leads to additional plantings leads to a lack of killer frost that might take out fruits that are flowering that need to benefit from that. And in the book too, I take a lot of the information on crops from actually the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, UNFAO, showing the relationship between increasing temperature, CO2, and crop production. It's a really good story. That again, one of the big things that goes unreported, perhaps.
Well, we have another listener. We have John in Bangor, Maine, who says, "Chris, I remember when you were having an interview with Calvin Beisner at the Cornwall Alliance. You were discussing how all of these leftists in the global warming hysteria tribe have really done such great immeasurable harm to the poor and downtrodden and underprivileged and impoverished that they claim to be the champions to defend. Many of these programs and policies and rules and regulations and laws that these leftists put into place because of the global warming hysteria actually tend to put the poorer among us out of work, such as those that work in lumber mills and coal mines. Can your guest even guess as to why liberals on the one hand claim to be champions of the poor, and yet they seem to be robbing them of their livelihoods left and right?"
Yeah, well, the true extremists, the climate extremists, the environmental extremists, don't even pretend to care about the poor. They will state that overpopulation is a problem. In fact, I've got an article being published tomorrow in PJ Media on the new NASA director. And I took a look at what happened to just NASA over the years. And their former director co-authored a book with Paul Ehrlichman where they actually advocated for severe population controls. And
wow.
This is involuntary. As NASA director, he advocated for, get this, sterilants to be put in food and water. To sterilize people.
Wow.
Yeah, and we see this. It's a devastating article. We tweaked it a little bit, but you'll be able to read that in PJ Media tomorrow about how the NASA has been, under the Obama administration, was just taken over by these left-wingers. So we were talking, and these people don't, they look at man, humankind, as a problem, not as a solution. They view that this is a huge problem for Mother Earth, and that the best result would be some massive depopulation event, you know, whether it be a flu or whatever. So no, I see that a lot. But yeah, the left wing, the Democrats, for the most part, champion the poor. But yet, we see that a lot of these things we're looking at here, increasing CO2 and the like, and rising temperatures, actually have tremendously beneficial effects to some of the poorest among us.
Yeah, well, it seems that the more moderate, even though we would still view them as extremely left-wing, the more moderate among them that at least claim to care about the poor seem to have been duped by the more extreme leftists who, as you just described, don't really care at all about the poor or any human life and safety anyway.
No, that's correct. It's I just finished up that op-ed last night, and I was really amazed at what I was reading about with some of these people. They were running NASA, the people that they put in charge. It was incredible. NASA was hijacked. Here I go off on a different tangent, but NASA under Obama administration was hijacked. His main priority for NASA was Muslim outreach. I kid you not. That was his stated primary goal, was Muslim outreach for NASA. So the things get crazy.
I don't even understand the connection there. In fact, I interviewed, I believe it was last year, time flies by here on Iron Sharpens Iron, but I interviewed Colonel Jeffrey D. Williams, who is a Christian astronaut. In fact, he took more photographs of Earth from space than any other astronaut. And he shared his confusion over what you just said about NASA and its new leader. But and by the way, John Bangor, Maine, please give us your full mailing address so we can have you or have CVBBS.com ship you a free copy of a free autographed copy of Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know by our guest today, Gregory Wrightstone. And by the way, folks, it's spelt with an R in there. A lot of you who have been sending me emails with questions have been spelling it Whitestone, and that's an understandable.
I get that a lot,
especially New Yorkers, because of the Whitestone Whitestone Bridge and Whitestone, New York, and so on. But it's Wrightstone, W-R-I-G-H-T Stone. Let's see here. We have Christian in Suffolk County, New York, who wants to know, is there a excellent documentary that we can recommend on climate control that comes from truthful, sane, reliable scientific sources?
I'm not going to be able to recommend one to you. I'm in the process of putting together and filming a series of YouTubes that will capture a lot of this, 2 and 3 minute YouTubes. That hopefully will be out there in the next week or two. I hope to have a series of 60 or 80 of these that will actually capture most of what we have in the book there. But no, I can't recommend something like that. I would recommend to your audience Alex Epstein's book, which is The Moral Case for Fossil Fuels. And I think my book is a perfect complement to his. But he has some great YouTubes. If you Google Alex Epstein, you can see what he has to say about. He pushes very similar, different argument than I have. Basically, that fossil fuels have lifted the world and poor out of deep poverty and have made the world an unlivable world livable, enabling us to live in the hottest and the coolest places to enable us to grow the crops that we have. And this book, Inconvenient Facts, is, I've been told, is a perfect complement to that book. And again, you can pick up Inconvenient Facts if you go to my website, inconvenientfacts.xyz, hit the subscribe button, and I'll send you a PowerPoint. You can buy it there, get $5 off. There's a promo code at that site. Or buy it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Just got put in the Barnes & Noble brick-and-mortar stores last week. So we're encouraged by the development and the activity and a lot of support we have for the book.
Great. And let's see here. We have CJ from Lindenhurst, Long Island, New York, who says, have there been any noteworthy scientists who for a while were parroting the same lies that we've been hearing from the left about global warming, who have finally been convinced that this is nothing more than exaggerations and lies and legends, and who have come around to publicly disavow themselves from that and claim to believe what you are teaching today?
Yeah, there's the head of the Weather Channel, and I'm drawing a blank on some names here, but he was and also one of the founders of Greenpeace, and again I'm drawing a blank on the name. He's come around decisively and in support of the skeptical view of and the benefits of CO2. So I'm drawing a blank on names right now.
Yes, I heard about the gentleman who was one of the founders.
Founders.
Yeah, and he was actually, I've seen him interviewed on Fox News and basically said
powerful.
Yeah, the junk science made him, forced him to just disavow his any relationship with them.
Well, I think we're going to see that coming up. I really do. I think there'll be more It's going to be really difficult, Chris, for these people to come around, though. I mean, once you've committed to something, it's hard to go back, and especially when it's something so deeply ingrained. It's a religion to these people, or religious-type aspects of their belief system. It's going to be difficult for a lot of these people to come around. But hopefully we'll have an overwhelming body of evidence to do that. I find that it's very, very impossible to make any rational argument, for example, on Facebook or any of the social media with these climate zealots. They immediately go on into ad hominem attacks and just throw up straw dogs or straw, whatever it is, and they're vicious. They're very vicious. So they haven't come after me with the long knives quite yet, a little bit, but it's coming. A little bit more success of the book, and I hope that your listeners out there would consider taking a look at the website. I have some pages there. You heard me talking about forest fires. I've actually got a page dedicated to forest fires there, and you can see some of the charts in the book. One of the things we should also talk, Chris, is the mortality as it's related to heat.
In fact, if you could pick up on mortality after our final break, it's going to be a very brief break. And if anybody would like to join us on the air, there are still a couple of people waiting online, so you better submit your question quickly before we run out of time. It's chrisarnzen@gmail.com, chrisarnzen@gmail.com. Please give us your first name, city and state, and country of residence if you live outside the USA. And only remain anonymous if your question involves a personal and private matter. Don't go away, God willing. We'll be right back after these
Calvary
messages.
Calvary Chapel, South Jersey would like to invite you to a day with Dr. Jason Lyle. Dr. Lyle is a well-known Christian astrophysicist who writes and speaks on various topics relating to science and the defense of the Christian faith. Dr. Lyle will be joining us here at Calvary Chapel, South Jersey on Sunday, May the 6th at 9 and 11 a.m., and then again that same evening at 7 p.m., speaking on topics such as the ultimate proof of creation, understanding Genesis, and astronomy reveals creation. So plan on joining us for an exciting experience of knowledge and wisdom as we spend time with Dr. Jason Lyle at Calvary Chapel, South Jersey, 1210 Hessian Avenue, West Deptford, New Jersey. For further information, check out our website at ccsouthjersey.org or call us at 856-848-4500.
One sure way all Iron Sharpens Iron radio listeners can help keep my show on the air is to support my advertisers. I know you all use batteries every day, so I'm urging you all from now on to exclusively use BatteryDepot.com for all your battery needs. At BatteryDepot.com, they're changing the status quo. They're flipping the script. They're sticking it to the man. In other words, they'd like to change the battery industry for good by providing an extensive inventory of top-of-the-line batteries that are uniformly new, dependable, and affordable. Ordering from BatteryDepot.com ensures you'll always get fresh out-of-the-box batteries you can count on to work properly at competitive prices. Whether you need batteries for cordless phones, cell phones, radios, PCs, laptops, tablets, baby monitors, hearing aids, smoke detectors, credit card readers, digital cameras, electronic cigarettes, GPSs, MP3 players, watches, or nearly anything else you own that needs batteries, go to BatteryDepot.com. Next day shipping available. All products protected by 30-day guarantees and 6-month warranties. Call 866-403-3768. That's 866-403-3768. Or go to BatteryDepot.com. That's BatteryDepot.com.
Lynbrook Baptist Church on 225 Earl Avenue in Lynbrook, Long Island, is teaching God's timeless truths in the 21st century.
Our church is far more than a Sunday worship service.
It's a place of learning where the scriptures are studied and the preaching of the gospel is clear and relevant.
It's like a gym where one can exercise their faith through community involvement.
It's like a hospital for wounded souls where one can find compassionate people and healing.
We're a diverse family of all ages,
enthusiastically serving our Lord Jesus Christ
in fellowship, play, and together.
Hi, I'm Pastor Bob Waldeman, and I invite you to come and join us here at Lynbrook Baptist Church and see all that a church can be.
Call Lynbrook Baptist at 516-599-9402. That's 516-599-9402, or visit lynbrookbaptist.org. That's lynbrookbaptist.org.
Charles Haddon Spurgeon once said,
"Give yourself unto reading. The man who never reads will never be read. He who never quotes will never be quoted. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read."
Solid Ground Christian Books is a publisher and book distributor who takes these words of the Prince of Preachers to heart. The mission of Solid Ground Christian Books is to bring back treasures of the past to minister to Christians in the present and future, and to publish new titles that address burning issues in the church and the world. Since its beginning in 2001, Solid Ground has been committed to publish God-centered, Christ-exalting books for all ages. We invite you to go treasure hunting at solid-ground-books.com. That's solid-ground-books.com and see what priceless literary gems from the past or present you can unearth from Solid Ground. Solid Ground Christian Books is honored to be a weekly sponsor of Iron Sharpens Iron Radio.
And make sure you go to solid-ground-books.com because they've got a whole bunch of sales and huge discounts that you want to take advantage of, as well as new things that are in print and in the works, including new editions of Pilgrim's Progress and devotionals related to Pilgrim's Progress and John Bunyan, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Go to solid-ground-books.com, and please make sure that you mention to them that you heard about Solid Ground Christian Books from Chris Arnzen on Iron Sharpens Iron Radio. Well, now we are back with our final 28 minutes or so of the broadcast that we are conducting, with Gregory Wrightstone, a geologist and author of Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. And our email address is chrisarnzen@gmail.com if you want to join us on the air before we run out of time. chrisarnzen@gmail.com. But you were saying right before the break, Gregory, that you wanted to talk about the mortality rate connected with heat.
Yeah, we hear a lot from the climate alarmist community. Lots of quotes just stating as a fact that increased warming is killing people, killing more people, and that the warming as we move forward is going to lead to increased heat-related and temperature-related mortality, that the extreme weather events are killing more people every year, and that will only increase as we go forward. Nothing can be further from the truth. I use, there are two studies in the book. One is a study in England and Wales looking at temperature-related mortality. In that study, they find that 15 times as many people die from cold-related, early deaths from cold-related issues than from heat. The largest study of its kind was published in late 2016. They looked at 74 million deaths worldwide, 14 countries, including the United States. And in that study, they found that 20 times as many people die from cold-related deaths as from heat-related deaths. It is not that great of a leap of faith to state that increasing warming will save millions of lives. Completely opposite of what we're being told. And if we just look at deaths related to extreme weather events in the United States, we see that there's been a 98% decline of extreme weather-related deaths in the U.S. over the last 100 years. That's included in the book, too. That's a good thing. That's a good thing, isn't it? I mean, I'd say it is. I want to give you an example here how they twist and take a kernel of truth and then turn it into something that's completely different. There was a study by the European Union. They looked at what the effect of global warming would do with deaths in the European Union. And what they, the reporting in Reuters and the AP, the big headlines were 160,000 additional deaths due to warming. Okay, that was the lead story. That was the big thing. It was by the year 2080, there'd be 160,000 additional deaths. You know what they forgot to add?
What?
Oh yeah. Well, the same report concluded that warming, we would see a 260,000 death decrease from cold-related deaths. So the big story should have been global warming will save 100,000 lives in the European Union. They did. They completely ignored the fact that 100,000 more people's lives would be spared an early death, temperature-related death, if we continue warming by the year 2080. And this is how they take it. And their reporting wasn't factually incorrect, because they just took part of the report rather than reporting the whole story. These are the things that they use. So, again, when we take a look at this from a Christian perspective, I mean, saving people's lives, saving temperature-related deaths, we should be happy about that. And these are things that should be reported, but they can't report them correctly because it doesn't fit the template. One of the things too, before we get draw too close to our time together here, I love the portion of the book where we talk about the relationship between heat and cold and the rise and fall of civilizations. Because we look back, if you look throughout history, we find that we see these warm periods that predate our current one. We're in the modern warming period. And let's just talk about the modern warming period for a moment. It's been warming since the year 1695, okay? In 1695, that was the depths of the Little Ice Age. It was called the Maunder Minimum. It was a period of time when the sun was not very active at all. It was very few sunspots, but it led to deadly cold. And this was some of the coldest coldest temperature of the last several thousand years. And the Maunder Minimum was 1695. For the next 40 years, we had the highest rate of warming since that time. And we've been in warming in fits and starts ever since then. For example, the River Thames froze on a yearly basis. And the last time that happened was 1812. So we've been warming in this. So we're in this modern warming period. But if we look back through time, we see there were other times of warming. We see it in the Minoan warming period, which occurred about minus 1500 BC. We saw the rise of the first great Mediterranean civilizations. It's called the Mycenaean culture, and also the first Egyptian rise of the Egyptian cultures of Akhenaten and so on. But then they went into a period of cold. It was called the Greek Dark Ages. Again, we had crop failure, pestilence, famine, and mass depopulation. And then during the time of Christ, we had the Roman warm period, where again we had great civilizations rise up. The Roman Empire, the first Chinese, the Han Dynasty there. And then it got cold again. Bad things happened. We went into the Dark Ages. Again, famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation. And then we saw another warming period in the Middle Ages, which gave rise to what they call the High Middle Ages. And we see each time as warming periods occur, we see the great civilizations rise up. And the reason for that is that people can grow a lot of crops. If you're Emperor Chris and you're in a warming period, you're going to be able to feed your subjects. Everybody's fat and happy. Your subjects don't have to worry about how they're going to feed their family tomorrow or what they're going to put on the table tonight for dinner. There's lots of food. But if you're Emperor Chris and you're going into a cold period and all of a sudden the crops fail, you can't feed your population, you're probably not going to be emperor for very long. People are going to rise up, and we see this, empires and civilizations collapse. In the warming periods with plenty of food, people have time to think, to dream, to invent, to sculpt. And that's what we see happening. And if you know the book, The 5,000-Year Leap, I'm sure you've probably read it or heard about it. Clausen was the author, where he argues we've had 5,000 years of rise of technology that's been compressed into the last 150 years. And I'm not going to contend that the warming had a whole lot to do with it, but I think we would have been challenged, our civilization today, if we were still mired in the low temperatures of the Little Ice Age. Because, again, we see historically great things happen, great civilizations rise up in the warm periods, and then, man, bad things happen when it gets cold. So we're now, we could be approaching the next ice age. It could happen probably, it might be in the next 500 or a couple thousand years. So it's probably not going to happen. It could happen the next 100 years. When that happens, that will be horrific.
Wow.
In the last ice age, we had virtually all of Canada was under ice. Most of the northern latitudes of the United States will be under ice. So maybe you can make an argument that Trump's building his wall on the wrong border. Because, man, you're going to have about every Canadian heading south. So my advice to your listeners, if you think that ice age is coming, don't sell your mittens. Better yet, buy some property in Costa Rica. Because, man, it's going to get bad. And it won't be funny. It will be horrific.
So you actually, you are fairly certain this is going to happen?
Well, sure.
If the world is around in 100 years. Obviously, it's ironic. You must be a post-millennialist that believes that there's some calamity going to take place at the end of the millennium that may be involving an ice age.
Well, we've been in these cycles, these ice age. I mean, we've been through a whole series on a regular basis, and we should be nearing the end of our current interglacial warming period now. So, it has been occurring quite regularly. It's due to what they call the Milankovitch cycles. It's the eccentricity of the Earth's orbit and the wobbles of the Earth. So it really affects how the sun warms the Earth.
So you don't believe that this future ice age is being created or will be created by man's activity?
No, not at all. No, I think there'll be very little we can do to prevent it.
Now, do you recall in the 1970s when there was the 180-degree opposite warning going on? It wasn't a global warming warning from some scientists. It was an ice age that was coming, and I think at that time in the 1970s it was being predicted it would be within the lifetime of the readers or not far after it. It wasn't as far off into the future as you're claiming now.
Right, and the reason was we had gone through, there was a 33-year cooling period from the mid-40s to the late 70s, all right, that temperatures had declined significantly. And if you put yourself back at that point, you could, and if I remember I was in college at the time, we had horrific winters, 1978, 79, 77, that were just brutal. And that was the end of the cooling period that we were in. And since after that, in the late 70s, we went into this period of warming that we've been in. And that really seemed to have ended about 1998 or so. And it's really been almost stagnant, flat in terms of temperature since the late 90s. But if you've been through 33 years of cooling, you could convince yourself that, maybe we are moving into the next ice age. Because it will happen at some point. I don't think any of your listeners have anything to worry about today or tomorrow or next year, but maybe their great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren might. At some point, it will occur.
So they can lock those extra mittens and sweaters in a safe somewhere for their progeny in the future.
Exactly. I think Costa Rica property would be might be the best. I like that idea. That would be. In fact, I might just go look into that this evening here. That sounds pretty good. I finally got spring here.
Well, actually, ironically, that it's. I think God has a sense of humor because as we are conducting this program today, Carlisle is experiencing its hottest day of 2018. It's more hot than I care for. It's a bit uncomfortable. We went from a spring that was like winter immediately into a spring that's like the hottest day of summer.
Oh, I know. I love it. I love it.
You love it more than I do.
Just remember, warm is good, cold is bad. and that's. Oh, and I need to. When you get your books, I've got some great iHeart CO2 stickers I included for you, and I've got some great buttons too. I didn't send you any of my buttons. Yeah, but it drives the environmentalists wild when they see me wearing an iHeart CO2 button, and that's why I do it. It's a good story we need to get out. And again, if your listeners, I do want to encourage them to go to the website inconvenientfacts.xyz and hit the subscribe button. I want to empower them with the PowerPoints. That way, their idiot brother-in-law that posts something stupid on Facebook from Mount Holly Springs. they'll have something. You know, if he posts something from Mount Holly about polar bears, they can have. Oh well, here's a PowerPoint. Here's a chart of polar bear population for the last 60 years, and you would have something that you can actually put on. But I'm asking your people when they go download that, just retain the source and reference data. That's vitally important for your credibility. And I've listed the detailed source and reference for each one of the charts. Maintain that. And that way I want to empower them for that. The book is a great reference source. I've had many, many, many people buy multiple copies that have come back and got the book, and then they said, I bought 12 more or 15 more. I want to give one to each of my grandkids. They said, I'm going to make sure they read it. And it's that kind of a book, so it is very, very readable.
Okay, we have Arnie from Perry County, Pennsylvania, who says, have you heard of the Evangelical Climate Initiative? They seem to be regurgitating the same things that the left is pushing down our throats. And I was wondering if you know anything about them and have had any opportunity to communicate and have exchange and debate with them.
No, I have not heard. I'll look for them, though. There is a Tom Steyer-funded group that's on campus now that's pretending to be, they may well be Republican, but they're certainly not conservative. They're saying that they're supporting free market capitalist solutions to climate change. Well, do you know what that is? That's a cap. That's a tax. A carbon tax is their proposal on carbon, but it won't go to the federal government. What they want to do is distribute it to those most in need. So we'll tax carbon and redistribute it, a huge redistribution policy. That's out there, and it's crazy. I had a chance. I was at CPAC down in D.C. with my book, and had a chance to confront the leader of this group. And they're it's Tom Steyer funded. If you're familiar with Steyer, he's a big funding source of a lot of these left wing causes.
Right. We have C.J. in Lindenhurst, Long Island, New York, who asks, is there a shred of evidence that global warming is caused by human activity?
Yes, there is a shred of evidence that, and we discussed it before, we are increasing CO2, and that increase in CO2 necessarily has to have some warming effect, but which I will argue that is quite modest, and it's quite overwhelmed by the natural forces that have been driving temperature since the dawn of time, because the one thing that's constant about temperature is it's never constant. It's going up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, no matter what, whatever period of time you want to look at. So our increase in CO2 will have a modest warming effect on the atmosphere. But again, well, I would argue that it would be a lot closer, if you're going to put a percentage, a lot closer to 5% to 95%. And again, if we look at the warming from 1695, let's just say from 1700 to 1850, it's about the same as from 1850 to now. And the first 150 years of that was entirely naturally driven. There's very little change. And we also see the other, there were 9 other warming periods during this interglacial warming period prior to our current modern period. And of those, 5 of the 9 had higher rates of warming that we see now, and all 9 ended up being a lot warmer than we currently are. So the warming trend we're in right now is neither unusual nor unprecedented, which is what people like Dr. Michael Mann at Penn State argue.
By the way, I think I forgot to tell Arnie in Perry County, and also our more recent questioner, CJ in Lindenhurst, Long Island, you have won also each a free copy of the book, the last 2 copies of the book, Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know.
And autographed copy.
Autographed copies, autographed by Gregory Wrightstone. So please make sure we have your full mailing addresses so we can have those shipped out to you. And I hope that I didn't give away too many, according to our stock that's coming in, our batch. But
let's give out the Cornwall Alliance information. That's cornwallalliance.org. I'd encourage everyone to go check that out.
Yes, it's Cornwall Alliance.org. And if you could, I'd like you to spend the next 3 minutes to just summarize what you most want etched in the hearts and minds of our listeners today before we go off the air.
Yeah, there's. Well, I guess number one would be that the levels of CO2, we're told we're at dangerously high levels. We're not. It's not dangerous. Again, we have submarines at 20 times the level of CO2 we have in the atmosphere. And the CO2 that we've seen throughout Earth's history averaged 2,600 parts per million. We're at 400 today. That's 6.5 times the CO2 throughout Earth's history than we are right now. So the big story about CO2 is that we're actually CO2 impoverished. We don't have too much. We have too little because the benefits of CO2 are great and many. And we didn't touch. We only touched on a few of them. There are quite a few listed in the book. Again, warming that we're in right now, we see that throughout history, the warming trends have been very, very beneficial, leading to great rises of great civilizations and the increase in food production. So those are 2 big things. We also see that temperature-related deaths with increasing temperature will mean a decrease in heat temperature-related mortality. We didn't get into any of the severe weather events, like tornadoes, are actually declining. The 2 lowest number of severe F3, they're called tornadoes, were 2013 and 2016 that NOAA has ever recorded, and they started in 1950. We see that hurricanes have actually been in decrease, although we had 3 landfalling major hurricanes last year. We had gone for 12 years prior to last year with no landfalling major hurricanes. That's the longest since 1850. We've gone that long without any major landfalling hurricanes. So we see a decrease in those in the tropical storms. So we've talked about a decrease in forest fires, significant decline. So we see. I'm preaching the good news of a prospering, greening, thriving Earth, and the relation because of that, it's prospering humanity, and you know we should really as Christians be grateful for that the Earth is prospering, that it's thriving, and that because of that we can feed those that are hungry, feed the needy. And go forward, and that's a great story to tell. So that's the synopsis of the book right there. And
could you, because people may have tuned in late or may have forgotten anything said, but could you once again try to help us explain, if some of these things that you are saying are so clearly provable scientifically, what could be the possible reason or benefit for those on the left to be perpetuating these myths about global warming? What, I mean, obviously there are people like Al Gore who have gotten wealthy and selling books and DVDs and movie tickets and all kinds of things, but what else would be the reason?
Well, I always, when we talk about these things, you almost feel like I ought to put my tinfoil hat on, because they really do sound like conspiracy theories. And it's almost unbelievable, but they're so clearly wrong, and it's provable. We look at it in the book, and that's a good question. I mean, why are they doing this, and what do they have to benefit? What do governments have to benefit from this? Increasing regulation, increasing taxes, greater regulatory control. The population will experience a loss of freedom, loss of choices. You know, we already can't buy the toilets we want, the light bulbs we want. That'll just get worse. I frankly don't have a good answer for you. We could speculate all day long. Is it really an anti-capitalist agenda that they have? Could be. Is it pro-socialist? Could be. But again, there's, in the book, I really stick to the science, because again, we're getting into speculation here, and we're trying to look into the people's hearts of why they're doing this, and I don't know. I will say that in the summary of the book, it's entitled "The Benefits of Principled and Action," and in that, I'm advocating not that we don't do things to combat things, if there are things that we can prevent, that's where we should spend the money, not trying to prevent or to control the uncontrollable is really, I think, a good way to put it.
But it doesn't sound like we should be preventing global warming from what you
said. Right, exactly. I mean, your listeners have probably never heard this, but the increase in CO2 and their increase in temperature are leading to a world that's a lot better due to the warming and increased CO2. And again, these are things that the inconvenient facts that Al Gore doesn't want you to know. They really are, and there's 60 of them listed in the book. I will say this is completely science and fact based in the book. The book has 14 pages of references, so if you read something in the book and you go, "What? I don't know," you can go back to the references and Google it yourself and find out. They're easy, you know. Most of these are not that hard to find the source reference and the source data, because some of the things you'll be challenged that you read in the book, that they'll challenge your very conception of what you thought was actually going on. It's a huge story. I had fun writing the book. I had one of my editors was Christopher Monckton, Lord Monckton from Great Britain.
Oh yeah, I've seen him on television. Oh,
yeah, he was a great addition. Brought a lot of insight. In fact, he's got a paper coming out. Hopefully, it was supposed to have been out by now. He's a math whiz, and he's looked at the climate models and torn them apart. He and two other co-authors, it should be coming out, where he's found three major flaws in the climate models that are used to predict this runaway warming that supposedly. And it's the mistakes that he found in there are significant, and propose. And again, he admits that, and in this paper, that increasing CO2 will increase temperature but a lot less than what was predicted.
And we're out of time, and the website is inconvenientfacts.xyz, inconvenientfacts.xyz. I want to thank you so much, Gregory, for being our guest today, especially since it was late notice. I want to thank everybody who took the time to write in, and I want you all to always remember for the rest of your lives that Jesus Christ is a far greater Savior than you are a sinner.